Good morning and welcome to the Sports Polygamy Podcast. I'm Eric George and it's the 30th of November 2012. Both myself and Kirk have spent a fair bit of time on this podcast talking about rugby union and where it's at in Australia right now, so I thought it'd be a good opportunity to get somebody on who knows a lot more about it than either of us to explain it. So I'm pleased to be joined by a past Wallaby, Brumby, Waratah and most importantly Rebel, Adam Fryer. How are you, Adam?
Well, you do say former Rebel now, happily retired, but certainly just got back from Bermuda and played a classic Wallabies match. 3 games in 1 week, and I tell you, I am so happily retired. That'll do me. No more footy.
Yeah, you did write a good column earlier this year about the tolls of a rugby career. It didn't make me too envious. So I figured we'd kick off. Essentially, I'd like to get your perspective on where you think union is in Australia right now, because I personally got into rugby about a decade ago when I was an early teenager, and that was kind of the end of the halcyon era for Australian rugby when obviously we hosted the World Cup here and it gained a lot of fame. And from a perspective now, it seems to be a little bit less prominent in a national scale than it was then. But how do you feel it is in the Australian sports landscape now?
Oh, look, I have to agree with you and everything you say there. I think I fell in love with the game at an early age, and I still do love the game, but for different reasons, obviously. Now, look, the problem is, and I wouldn't even call it a problem, it's, you think about it, the winter sporting market in Australia, there's no dynamic like it anywhere in the world. And if you look at it in the United States with the model they've got, every, not just city, or suburb, every town across the whole country or every state is represented by a team. So we've got especially this very concentrated market, and we are such a sports-loving nation, you tend to get this logjam. And at the moment, we're sliding. There's no doubt. The A-League has just proven to be an absolute success, not just with their national team, but the actual competition itself. Why? Because it's entertaining. The change of the laws have been one thing that, you know, punters want to learn the game, they want to know the game, but the rules that they come in and they always evolve. And of course, we get different interpretations. We get, one player that can be cited and get 16 weeks, another for 8 for a completely different incident. And, you know, you've got one referee that's grown up in South America officiating a breakdown in a match which is governed by Australia, New Zealand. So there are so many different little variables, and the punter's not happy. The punters pay a premium price for a ticket for a rugby game, and they certainly expect more. But in saying that, I think every code goes through certain stages of, I wouldn't say reincarnation, but look, rugby league did it through the Super League war. AFL had its time where it wasn't the premier sport. It's clear the premier sport now, but I'm just thinking in the economy now and how it all works. The AFL have just got this mega TV deal. Rugby league have just done the same thing. Now, if the AFL gets some things right, in particular media and access and what you can be accountable towards, you know, they're going to be hard to catch. But I still think the rugby does have its followers, and certainly at a demographic, at an older demographic, the older generations will always support their code. But we've lost our way a bit in the last couple of years, maybe even since the last World Cup, probably 4 years ago, where the young generation, like you and I love rugby, I'll always love it, but have come through and they've sort of been, you know, have stepped away from the game a bit, and they don't love it as much. And then who are they going to pass that love on to? And I love rugby union because my grandfather loved it, and all my family have loved it. It's always been passed on to me through generation. Now, because of this year now, this last 4 years, that's the scary thing. We mightn't feel the ramifications of this for probably in 20 years' time when we pass it on to our kids or people, and then we go from there.
I guess the upside to that, though, is that there's still time to save it. It's not over yet.
No, look, it's not doom and gloom. It's not doom and gloom. And I will suggest the British Lions thing is a huge year for us next year. I actually liken the British Lions to be better than a World Cup, especially if it's on your home soil. The Sea of Red, the bars are full. The rugby's entertaining. It's great. And look, if you knock off the Lions 3-0 or even 2-1, it certainly resonates throughout the world. I'm not doom and gloom on rugby. Trust me, I'm the opposite. And we need to have consistency throughout Super Rugby, there's no doubt, and all our teams vying for finals positions. And the other thing is, and I do know that there is something in the works and on the cards, an ARC style of competition that can tap into not just new teams or franchises, they call them, just throw them in the mix and start a new competition. It'll be a grassroots level competition where you have tribalism. And that's one thing that's difficult to understand as well. A lot of people, and me being in Melbourne now, They don't know where the Southern Kings are from. They don't know where the Sharks are from. And it is about being part of a tribe and owning a certain territory. And that's what rugby's always been about. And in Super Rugby, it's hard to drive that in Australia.
So you feel like a big success factor going forth will be linking Super Rugby to the grassroots level and getting that club level back into the feel of a more professional level game.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I'm of the notion, I always say this, you know, sport, in particular rugby, it's not a plant that you should be looking at the petals and the flower up top and trying to water that. You water the grassroots and you water the mud. And there could be an argument to say that I wouldn't bring the RU and us first then mentality, but certainly there's been a lot of emphasis on how the Wallabies go as a team, and with too much focus on sort of one match, where I do believe that the game needs to sort of thrive from a grassroots level, and we should be looking at participation rates, how junior teams are going, how the schoolboys are going, how the under-20s are going. I think that's a better gauge on how our sport is. And usually, and the way the marketing system works, we are top-heavy, and we do rely upon the success of the Wallabies for our code to thrive and prosper. And now, look, last year we won the final Tri-Nations. We ended up winning that trophy, but really, it was only a really short sort of game. Like, we need to be winning like the Kiwis do, and they're just simply phenomenal at the moment for us to really stand out as a code. And that comes as a result of the code help being healthy at the grassroots, at the mud, as I call it.
Yeah, no, it's certainly bad timing for the Wallabies in terms of what the All Blacks are producing right now. Do you think that marketing, that promotion of rugby as the concept is held back because so much of the high-profile parts of rugby are governed by international bodies, by SANZA, by the IRB, so you don't get a consistent approach that works for an Australian market?
Oh, look, there's certainly merit to that, but I think the ARU control most of the marketing budget, and look, they would allocate their resources accordingly, but I do think that more from a laws point of view, I wouldn't put it from a marketing point of view, but certainly from the laws, look, if it's a game that's 12-6 and it's a Heineken Cup final and there's no try scored at 12-6, the punters are absolutely jumping out of their seats. They love it. They love that sort of footy, that sort of crash and bash style. But here in Australia, you know, if that happened in a Super Rugby final, we'll almost get booed off stage because we get home, we watch a game of rugby league or AFL, and it's non-stop. I wouldn't say it's entertaining, but it's non-stop. It's a different, you're comparing different apples with apples, where back in UK and Ireland, where the game is governed by the IRB, it's, you know, the game's thriving. You're comparing it to Gaelic football or in most circumstances, football, soccer. Here, we just can compare it to so many different sports, and then you make an opinion that's not entertaining. But in saying that, from a marketing thing, I don't think that matters, but certainly from a game and a governance point of view on the rules, certainly, yeah, we are held at some sort of restraint.
So I guess the problem is for rugby right now is they obviously are trying to expand in Super Rugby with the Rebels, who you work with. Melbourne's not... I'm not convinced that rugby's a sport that people are going to jump on, even if you can simplify the rules a little bit. It's still such a hard game to learn that don't you think they'll have to be drawn to it by things other than just the beauty of rugby union? Like, don't you think that marketing presence and the other things that the AFL does so well will need to get improved at some level?
Oh, I agree with you entirely on everything you say there, but and that's not to say that I want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I do think that there is a part of the game that needs to evolve. You know, I'm not endorsing this idea, but certainly there has been thrown out that there should be SANZA rules, but you know, the IRB wouldn't let that happen. We're just governed by a different game. The game needs to be more of an entertaining product. I hate calling it a product as well, but it needs to be a more entertaining sport. Look, and we saw the ramifications of Chris Hickey when he said that we don't care how we play or we don't care if we play boring rugby, we just want to win. You know, that was almost the spiral that Waratahs have been led down, and they really haven't got themselves out of it since. And Michael Cech has been very strong in saying that we're going to play an entertaining style of footy. Everything is about entertaining, and although we are a sport, we're in the entertainment industry, and if you aren't out there putting on a show, you know, and it does come down to that, the punter doesn't get back and buy the ticket, or he doesn't get a membership the following year, or, you know, and the worst case scenario is he decides not to buy Foxtel because he'd prefer to watch free-to-air rugby league or AFL.
I'd definitely like to get to the TV thing a little bit later because I think it's a key point for rugby. But that balance you're talking about between winning and entertaining the fans, how do you think that's worked out for a team like the Rebels, who obviously want to attract a new audience to the game. Do you feel like they've lent one way more than the other in terms of entertaining versus winning rugby?
Look, I think the Rebels are probably a different proposition to anyone else. I think the Rebels have avoided the rugby recession because it is a new sport down here, and it's all about the first year is who we were, the second year is what we do, and I think now, in our third year, we have to be accountable to a lot of our actions. And look, the side that we've got on paper, we should win a lot more games than we have been. We've got Scott Higginbotham, Curly Bill, James O'Connor, they are all entertainers, and I'm certainly looking forward to it. But look, the balance is there, and I'm still not sold on the idea. If the Rebels were without a bonus point but won every single one of their games and made the finals, they're still pretty happy. But I don't think the Melbourne Storm, although they've got some very prolific players of Billy Slater and Cameron Smith, you know, I don't think they didn't win games by a lot of points. They ground out games. They were part of a wrestle. They just sort of got the game won that way, and they're renowned for that. So time will tell. But look, I would love to suggest that people come to our games because they're part of a club and part of a culture and part of a movement, and I think that's a lot of what our supporters are. We really won't see the fruits of this club and how well it's done probably for another 5 years, but all systems are go. We've got great membership. At the moment, we're second in line behind Queensland as how many members we do have. We've got a great stadium, and we've got a really young squad, especially the likes of myself, Sterling, Julian Huxley, Al Campbell, all these Wallabies that came here to set up the culture in the club. I've moved on. I think it's dropped about 4 years. So average age about 26. Everything's poised to be great. Whether it's entertaining or not is yet to be seen. But looking at the track at the moment, Hilly's got them playing an expansive style of footy. And you know what? That's what wins Super Rugby. All the clubs that have won Super Rugby have all been the leading try scorers with the least amount of points, obviously. But they're all out there scoring points. The Chiefs are a great example, and the Stormers, who have fared pretty well the first couple of years, but did it on their defence. Where the real entertainers like the Crusaders and the Chiefs win rugby. So winning, entertaining, attacking rugby wins Super Rugby. So you've got to get on board.
Yeah, no, I'm certainly like the sound of that. Speaking about Melbourne as a sporting market, obviously it is very different to, you know, Sydney, Canberra or Brisbane. It's a lot more jam-packed. The unique challenges that it presents, how do you feel like rugby needs to be approached differently in Melbourne?
With as far as it being a different sport, mate, you've never seen anything like it. AFL sucks the oxygen out of this town, which is, you know, you've got to pay tribute to their fans and for the way the game's done. And it's sensational. It's great. I went to the AFL final, absolutely loved it. Every time or every game that I go to, whether it's Storm, Melbourne Heart or AFL watching the Swannies, I'm always looking and saying, what can rugby do here? What are we doing differently? What are the differences? But it does come from an undercurrent with the community. Especially with a lot of the support we get. We've got a Weary Dunlop membership, which is a pretty high-end membership, which just sells out. It sells really well. But also, there's an untapped potential here in the community out past Northcote in the inner suburbs of the Polynesian community that are very much blue-collar, which I don't think rugby's really tapped into the way it should. So, you know, there is hope because a lot of people here in Melbourne, I didn't realise it. I spent all my time in New South Wales and a little bit with the Brumbies, where they are rugby mad and certainly appreciate all their sport. But coming to Melbourne, I didn't understand or realise the full potential that the club and the state has because of the local juniors coming through and this blue-collar area, which is out near Northcote and Frankston, all these places. They absolutely love their rugby, and they're good at it. We've got five Australian schoolboys in this year. And one of the players that's just been drafted out of school now, who's a junior, who's moved straight into the International Sevens team. So he's even bypassed all the juniors, gone straight to level. And I think that the RU are recognising that. So in answering your question, how do we combat it? We've just got to sit back, have faith in what we're doing as far as a development system here in Melbourne and back it, because we're starting to see the fruits of it now.
How much of a locked-in situation do you get with these juniors that are coming up in the Victorian area? Are they free to pick wherever they want to go?
No, and that is a potential issue as well. So there is housing at the moment through Queensland and New South Wales at these national academies. There is a little bit of resistance down here from us, but certainly we respect the ARU's wishes and how they want to manage the talent. But a lot of players here will play for their local clubs, and now, through common sense, there is an apprenticeship program at each state where any sort of kid or player that shows promise joins an apprenticeship sort of style of system in the clubs where they go and train with the team for a few months in the off season and to see what they're like, and hopefully build into a new Super Rugby contract. And I believe in that. I certainly believe that, you know, all players, and I'm the president of the Players Association, so I should be endorsing wages and rights and things like that. But my first contract was $6,000. My second one when I was playing Super Rugby was 30. So I think introducing a system where you actually earn your street cred and earn your stripes to earn a better wage, it might actually have a good result in the end, although it doesn't present monetary value at the start. You know, using the college system is a good example. If you pass your university, you can get in and play. There's all sorts of things you can put around, but certainly there is a lot more, I wouldn't say authority, but there's a lot more way in getting local kids to play for their states, which we've looked through the squads at the moment. The Waratahs are an example where most of their back line are Queenslanders, and it just doesn't work for me. I want to see Victorians playing for the Rebels. I want to see the Queenslanders playing for the Reds. But we're going to have to wait 10 years because we've sort of watered down the cordial, so to speak, to supply these players throughout five teams, which you do present a good argument to say that maybe we grew a little bit too quickly. But I certainly see the Rebels being a team that's played by Victorians in 5 to 8 years' time. We'll have probably half a dozen in there, and moving forward, that's what we'll be aiming to do.
And I guess that'll amplify that tribal aspect that you were suggesting will be a key factor for especially the Rebels going forward.
Oh, no doubt. And we haven't really had a Victorian come through the system and play for the Rebels as of yet. We had Lloyd Johansson, who came back from Japan to play, who was Victorian, played his juniors through Box Hill. But certainly it'd be a great occasion. And mate, I just saw the success of the ARC when Melbourne were down here, how much their city got behind just that club. They love the grassroots stuff, mate. They, you know, Port Melbourne play a local VFL competition, they get 8,000 in some of their games. It is. And that's the one thing I have learned by being in this state. When I do consider myself partially Victorian now, my baby will be born in Victoria, and we've bought a house here and we live here. They love getting one up over New South Wales and certainly to play against Queensland.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. When you were speaking before about how effective the AFL is as a live experience, I certainly agree with that, and I think Rugby League has certainly figured out how to do the televised game very well. Do you think there's a key edge or a niche that Rugby Union can find to separate itself from the other big codes?
Well, actually going to the game, the B2B experience, I mean business-to-business experience, is something that a lot of people go to rugby for, especially in the corporate hospitality suites, and that's from a very, very high end where I see that. I do think that rugby has a point of difference overseas. They're strawberries and cream, as you'd think. So if you go to Pretoria, they're all there at 4 o'clock and they're all there to bring their barbecues in the back of their utes and they have a barbecue. In Twickenham, they all bring cheese and bread and they all have wine. They sit in the car park. So it actually becomes a festival or a gala or a day of rugby. Where here in Victoria or even around Australia, we get to the footy, you might get there half an hour before a game, have a beer and bolt in there. And that's why there's so much resistance at ANZ Stadium. You're there for the footy, where if you're at the Sydney Football Stadium, you can have a beer and wander in. But as far as the product goes and an entertaining aspect, look, if your team's winning and you're wearing your jersey and you're sitting there pretty at the top of the competition, it's always a lot more fun. But there are... I love going to the rugby. I love going to watch Randwick play down at Coogee Oval. I love watching the Unicorns play here. There's a different feel at different match. And, I do think rugby does need something. And something the Rebels are trying to address at the moment is opening up the front of Amy Park and actually, you know, having buskers play and barbecues on and trying to emulate that European feel as they do at Stade or Twickenham or even in Bloemfontein or Pretoria.
Right on. Look, moving on, well, one thing you did mention before was the TV aspect of rugby union, and it's a bit of a sore point for a lot of union fans. There seems to be a bit of a shift in debate from what I've seen from some sports writers who actually seem to be moving on from the importance of free-to-air TV for sports coverage. I disagree. I think the fact that people never see rugby on TV, especially in Melbourne, is a hindrance to its success. Do you think that securing more regular and better quality free-to-air coverage is important to rugby's health?
Look, there's an answer to that, and it happened at last TV rights deal where rugby can negotiate with Foxtel, and what Fox do is they pay overs for a product that no one else can have. They have exclusive rights. They have exclusive rights of the sport is where you pay a little bit over. Now, if rugby was to take one of those games away from Foxtel to play free-to-air, that deal is worth 30 cents in the dollar. I don't know, but it's significantly less for Foxtel, not to say they've got exclusive rights to the rugby. So there's a financial component to it. Now, is the risk versus reward there? If you were to take the financial risk, would you get the reward of it being more mainstream and out there, and the punter actually appreciating Laurie Weeks or these unknown players because they're a bit of a character, because they've seen them on free-to-air and because they actually understand the soap opera of the sport. And that's what AFL do very well, and that's what rugby league do very well, because everyone can sort of have access to their talent and their players and shows like that. So you actually fall in love with the character, not so much the player and the sport. I'm a big believer in it making it happen. The A-League and Soccer Australia, the FFA, done a great job. They've negotiated it's an hour delay, mind you, but a Friday night game every week in the A-League. I think that's what's happening moving forward. I don't know if it's implemented this year, but they're still exclusively on Foxtel. So whoever's done that deal has done extremely well to be able to put into place. We're not going to get the earn. Are we willing to take the hit for us to be on free-to-air? And that's the question that rugby, I'm sure, has pondered but hasn't gone down that path. We need to get on free-to-air. Channel 9 didn't do the best job, and I reckon they're probably the first to admit it, but we need to be able to have rugby access to the world. And I believe Channel 10 are on board now, and Channel 10 missed out on the AFL. They missed out on the NRL. I think this is the best thing that could have happened to rugby, is Channel 10 to say, right, we're on board, we're going to grow your sport at an international level. I'm just hoping that they have a highlights package or their common sense may prevail in saying we need to get on free-to-air and we need to make sure that we fall in love with the characters of the game, not so much just this exclusive sport. And again, if we're talking and we're bringing back on the podcast there, talking about the blue-collar people of rugby, and there are a lot of blue-collar peoples out the country and also throughout Sydney and here in Melbourne and everywhere, we keep referring to rugby as the tweed sport. I'm telling you, I've played out at some of these suburbs like Nepean Oval, and they love their rugby out there. And they're not ones that would, and some might be able to afford Foxtel. They don't see the value in Foxtel. So it's a very interesting debate. And as I say, it's just all about risk and reward. And the high risk situation at the moment with the AU is it's a financial loss. And, it's not one they're willing to take. And I respect them for that. That's why, the likes of Matt Carroll and formerly John O'Neill and all these people that govern the game, that's why they're paid well and they make the big calls. So obviously they know what they're doing.
It's a very balanced answer. I'll give you that. I want to finish up, Adam, by asking you a question about the Rebel squad for next year. This year was a bit of a step forward for the team, from what I could see. And there was quite a few young guys had a bit of a breakout season. Who do you reckon is going to be the star next year that perhaps wasn't so prominent in 2012?
Oh, mate, look, there are so many. We've got Shopohori, there's the Japanese hooker. He could be in it. He'll be a crowd favourite. He could potentially be the first Japanese player to ever play Super Rugby because we are the season opener for the first game in 2013. Look, Nick Sturzaker, I'm going way left field here. We've got a little halfback, a redhead dynamo, Nick Sturzaker, who's, we picked him up from third grade at Sydney Uni. He is just an absolute gem. And a real sort of halfback, really cheeky. So, Caden Neville, I think you wouldn't say he's going to have a big season. You already have one. It won't be a surprise. I think Hugh Pyle had a quiet year last year. And being in and around the traps at the moment, he is just in prime condition. He's like a Group 1 winner in the mounting yard at the moment. He's big, he's ripped, and he's raring to go. But look, if I had to put all my eggs in one basket and one player that's going to have a massive year, that would be Jared Saffy. He had a great first year last year. He had a neck injury, which he sustained at training. And now he's on song. He's rehabilitated and looks a treat. So I just think it's going to be a real headache for someone like Damien Hill to be able to pick the scene this year because there are so many options in each position. In particular, that back row with Scott Hickenbotham joining us. Luke Jones will have to squeeze out of the second row because of Pyle and Neville. And then you've got Jared Saffy, Gareth Delve, the list goes on. And that's the headache you want to have this time of year.
Terrific. Yeah, that's absolutely the kind of problem you want to have. All right, Adam, thanks very much for coming on. It's great to hear the passion for union in your voice. I love it. And really appreciate your input.
Absolute pleasure, mate. And he's hoping for a dynamo 2013, which I am a strong ambassador for, especially here in Victoria. It'll be the biggest year in Victorian rugby history. with a new team, the Lions coming to town in that Lions test match. Don't ever underestimate how big that Lions series will be.
Fantastic. I look forward to it.
Cheers, man.
All right. That'll do us for today. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the Sports Polygamy Podcast. Thanks.